This is Tricia Griffin-Cardi, and I want to welcome you to the October 2017 Storytelling Lab. And our topic, our theme this evening, is all things story. And this is a slightly different kind of story lab because instead of having a featured speaker, we have many featured speakers. Our lab takes on a new look tonight because on this call, the speaker is everybody on the call. So many passionate storyteller practitioners in our midst that the board thought it might be a nice idea to allow an opportunity for us to do some, not cross-ventilation, but cross-fertilization or something like that so that we can actually share some ideas and just in an informal, open conversation. So I'm going to encourage people to share your best practices from the field, and it's a very big field or a very big tent to choose from. So as Truth in Advertising, I'm looking at the wonderful flyer done by our own Pete Griffin here, and it says, I will start off the call with a couple of things, and that's just what I'm going to do. So I thought, and then I'm going to open it up to the crowd. So I thought I'd start with three things. They're sort of like, I don't know if they're best practices. They're really fun go-to things for me, and then just open up our conversation. And I guess the first thing that I want to start, I wanted to share an activity that I use. I am focusing right now, and I'm a presentations coach and storyteller. I use storytelling to help people make or create memorable, effective presentations. Many times people say, I don't have any stories. And, of course, we know everybody does. But I've been on a mission recently trying to nail down or at least articulate or at least identify some ways you can begin to, quote, find your story. So far from thinking about theme or meaning or any of that, my activity is that I ask people to think of a moment, something that struck their fancy, something they just remember, you know, they saw something, they did something, a smell, whatever it was, but some kind of moment that kind of sticks with them. And then to write the scene around that or just say what was going on and who was there and what was happening. And to tell it to somebody else, and in that fashion, we begin to hear ourselves talk. And I have found that out of that, once the scene is developed and it goes on for a while, meaning begins to emerge. And it might be the meaning for that person on a personal level. It might be something they might say, wow, this is something I can use with my group, my team next month, because it's really about customer service or it's whatever. And we find the most unlikely connections that once you see them look like, well, they were there all the time. So I call that find a moment and kind of take it from there. And I found that to be a very helpful thing for people getting unstuck and feeling successful. Like I do have stories and they're out there and now I don't need to think about a theme, leadership, risk taking. I just need to find a moment and then build a scene around it. So that was my activity that I wanted to put out. And then I wanted to reference a book. And this book was written in 1999. It's excellent. It's by Doug Lipman, who just received, I think, the Lifetime Award from NSM. And it's called Improving Your Storytelling, Beyond the Basics for All Who Tell Stories in Work or Play. And I judge the value of a book by how many pages I have turned down and how many notes I have. And this book is battered, but I use it a lot, and it just holds absolutely so true today. And Doug has gone on to do many kinds of things around the world of story, but I particularly like this, Improving Your Storytelling Beyond the Basics. And I guess the last thing that I'll share is not, I don't know if it's the best practice, but it's something I did last Thursday night. I went to a beautiful museum here in the Boston area called the Isabel Stewart Gardner. And Isabel was a very wealthy woman, I guess, at the turn of the century, and built this. It's called her home, but it really is a museum. She really didn't live there. She lived not too far away on Beacon Hill, but filled it with objects from all over the world, art and tapestry and statuary, and there's an area where there's flowers and water and all that, so it's an amazing place. The Moth had come there to do a story slam, so we were in a hall, and I really didn't know what the evening was going to be. I thought we were going to listen to stories, but it turns out it was a story slam, So I put my name in, and I had the opportunity to tell the story to about, I don't know, maybe 150 people. And there were 10 of us who did this, and it was just the most fun evening. And what I came away from it with was I told a story that I did pretty well, but I saw how I could do it differently. From what there's something about watching other people, but also doing it yourself. And I don't do a lot of performing. I do very little. I work with clients one-on-one. I run workshops, so I'm not on a stage. This is maybe the second time I've done this. And it was a stretch, and it was so worthwhile. So I guess that's a piece on maybe try new things and be a learner and be a sponge, and I really enjoyed it. So those are my three, and you don't have to have three. I thought I'd give you some breath around that, so I'm going to open it up to callers on the line to see who's got something they'd like to share. And I'm going to toss the ball out into the middle of the group.
Hi, this is David. I've used that first activity that you've mentioned in previous lives. I've been director of training for Liberty Mutual Insurance in your hometown.
Yeah.
And also Arkwright Boston, which was in your hometown, now part of Pacific Mutual. And, you know, in trying to tell stories relating to sales and outcomes and objectives. And the same objection, I can't tell a story.
Yeah.
And I've used that same tool about, tell me about the happiest thing you remember being with your mom or your dad, or tell me about that close your eyes and describe to me the most beautiful thing you've ever seen in the world. Something, some kind of happy place kind of moment for them, because it's easier for them. And start working with them on creating dialogue so they can kind of take other people to wherever that event occurred or that place that they saw was. It takes time. I mean, some people grab it right away, as you know. Others won't ever get there. But the majority of folks get close, get in the range. And I find it to be a very effective tool, especially starting with those positive moments.
Nice. Most beautiful thing you've ever seen. That's a lovely way to start something. Thanks, Dave.
And Tom here, and I would like to just jump on that bandwagon of the moments, because as some of you know, I've gotten a grant from NSN to work with an organization called the HELP Program, which is folks who have been in jail, have been released, and now they're trying to find and keep work, and the organizations to help them do that. And they go through different phases as members of the organization, starting with like new member and then learning member all the way up to a thriving member. And so I've been working with them, and a lot of people are like, you know, I guess I got some stories, but I don't know. But if I pose the question as, do you have any memories? And every single memory that you have, if you describe that memory, becomes a story. People immediately get that. And they're like, yeah, I remember a lot of stuff. And then we can work with some simple prompts. And one that we have just is our starting membership prompt that the members themselves developed is, why do I want to change my life? And then a bridge comment for that is, you know, what's one memory that gives you motivation to change your life? It can be either positive or negative. But making the stories be their memories has really opened up the power of storytelling to the group and to the individuals, because they just have so many vivid memories. And of course, sometimes the memories are very raw or they're traumatic. So we have to be careful what we open up in a talk. But just that idea of a moment or something that they're remembering, as Dave put it, you know, and just any memory becomes a story. I think if one opens it up and describes it. So I just wanted to share that.
Thank you.
Other thoughts on that?
Well,
this is Geralyn.
Okay, Geralyn from
I've just been thinking about the kind of work that I've been doing with organizations and generally smaller companies where we use a lot of the appreciative inquiry methodology and we'll take people through a whole part of the process, but it all really hinges on people being able to draw upon a moment where they felt successful in order to plan for further success. Because in that moment or that time of feeling successful, then we sort of tease out what were the attributes that they contributed to that experience or how did that feel and how might it feel in the future? And then we take that and push that out anywhere from 6 months to 10 years for planning purposes of now, you know, and it's always put in, imagine yourself in X year or X time and everything is going according to plan. What does that look like? And really taking people into that moment of having come out of thinking about a time of success in the past and how that success can influence the future and come to life in the future. And it generally ends up being a lot of stories that are shared because they're not thoughts or intellectual tenets or rules or, you know, anything like that that they have to follow. It's all about the experience of what it's going to look like and how it might happen. And it's people often surprise themselves that they've even considered some things as possible that they always considered impossible.
Hmm. Wonderful. I'm going to tag along with that since we're doing a lot with the moment right now, and I think probably some of you have done this, if not all of you, but I've asked in small groups at times people to bring in an object that has some significance to them and to talk about it, and generally that's a way to kind of begin to get to you know, what are your values? Sometimes that's a very daunting question. I don't know, I'm a kind person or whatever, but you bring in something of significance to you and you say why it's important to you. I found that that kind of unlocks things in a nice, non-threatening way. Again, and it's positive. And I remember somebody brought in her planner. She brought in this planner, office planner, to the session. And she said, what she said was, I'm the organizer in my whole family. I'm the youngest of five. Everybody's out and got grandkids and all that, you know. She said, and I organize all the family events. I organize at work, and I love it. And she just went on to talk about that and the joy she got from pulling together events and people and all of that. And from that, she picked out a particular story that she wanted to use. So it seems like we have a lot of traction. What was I going to say? Sorry, I just got a distraction on my call here. With moments and with objects. So, other thoughts? And it doesn't have to be anything connected to that. Could be a resource. Could be something you've done recently, something you've seen.
Well, yeah, Chris, this is Pete. When you mention objects, it brings to mind I use when I'm working with groups, working on problems, trying to lead a group or facilitate a group, sometimes I'll start them out with a story that I remember when the Berlin Wall was built and how the world looked at that time and worried about nuclear holocaust and ducking and covering and figuring out what the military targets were around our home that might be hit and how it would affect us. And that world stayed unchanged for almost 30 years, and then 1 year the wall came down. And I tell folks when they're working on problems together that sometimes we face problems that seem like they're almost insurmountable. And yet this was a fact of life, the Berlin Wall and what it represented. And then I pull out a rock out of my pocket, and And it's a piece of the Berlin Wall that one of my employees had been bicycling in Europe in 1990, and he brought this piece of the Berlin Wall back. And when he retired, he passed that along to me, and I said, that represents something that I never, ever thought in my lifetime would ever change. So the problems that we're working on today they pale in significance to the ones that we've faced in this world. So there is hope, and I carry that piece of the Berlin Wall wherever I go with me when I travel.
Really? That's great. Hmm. Thank you. Objects, ideas. I'm going to toss in two resources here. So I'm taking a new tact here. I'm just looking at my notes while we're thinking, because these are a couple of things. I'm not sure if people are familiar with it. It comes out once a week on Sundays, something called Brain Pickings. Does anyone know about that? Brain Pickings, and it's brainpickings.org.
Yes, I love her.
I love that. I'm trying to think her name.
Yeah.
Popova, I believe, and she pulls together articles and insights. And the last one was very moving. It was all about different kinds of love, and it's just a very wonderful thing to get in your mailbox every Sunday morning. And I think someone's joined us.
It's Jules.
Oh, hi, Jules. Hi, Jules. This is Tricia. Welcome.
Great.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Jules, yeah, I'm glad you could be here. You've got a lot going on in the background. Could you...
I'm going to move.
Okay,
let me move someplace else. Okay.
All right. And I'm just going to finish off my thought here. The second resource that I like a lot is called Ishmael's Corner.
Well, I'm glad she moved.
Okay.
Yeah.
Jules, can you go on mute? And mute
I am.
Is...
Yeah.
Oh, much better. Are you there, Jules?
Yeah, I was walking. Bear with me. Two seconds.
Okay. So if we remember Moby Dick, what's the first line in Moby Dick?
They call me Ishmael.
They call me Ishmael. And this is called Ishmael.
That's all I know about that book.
It's okay. That's a start. It is literally a start. They call me Ishmael. And it's by a guy named Lou Hoffman. And I don't know much about Lou, but I just went on it recently, and it seems like it's really evolved into this. It's all about story. It's all about business storytelling and perspective. So this is just free, you know, easy to access, wonderful resources, I think, that are out there that I like a lot, and I need to look at more because I find them giving me ideas about things to do in workshops. So I'm going to see now, would somebody else like to offer something they're doing or using?
I'm sure others have used some similar kind of tool, but, you know, depending on how big the group is and how diverse they are, if they don't know each other, usually I break them into groups of twos, have them spend some time with each other, and you know, something that's unusual about the other person. You know, I walked them, I did 10 marathons or, you know, well, whatever crazy thing it might be. And then have other people introduce the person, but the unusual fact, but not introduce them per se, just saying that. And then people try to figure out who that person was who did that strange, quirky, unusual thing. And it breaks the ice, but it also gets people to help tell a story to make an introduction to somebody.
Oh, that's a nice idea, Dave. So it's sort of like you hear all the unusual facts. People go around and give the unusual facts, and then how do you actually try them to do the matching? Do you say just guess, or could you? I'm trying to visualize that next piece.
Yeah, I just match people up separately, have them, you know, break away for 10, 15 minutes. Like in my case, you would never guess that one time I danced in an Esther Williams outfit. Nothing.
Okay.
You would never guess that, would you?
Okay.
And
see,
it was for charity. It wasn't something I do normally.
You said you were a liar.
I was just saying, Sherilyn, thank you. I did not have to. I did not have to go into my facilitator voice.
I thought it was Isadora Duncan.
Yeah, well, see, yeah.
Yeah.
We all have those things in our past. So but I, so we'll break people into group, and then, you know, it's your turn. But it's kind of a blind breakout. You kind of just break away. And then you introduce a person, my person that I was with, you know, at one time was in a charity and dressed in his Esther William outfit, and you wouldn't expect that that and then it helps then through that evening or afternoon and lunchtime, you kind of, if it's a morning thing, you say who's who. And then as you break away for lunch, people have fun and they can ask questions to each other. But just as a way to both help people tell a story that's fun and it gets them in that mood of relating to each other.
This is nice, nice openers here. Others? And again, it doesn't have to be an opener.
It's Jewel.
Okay, Jewel.
Okay. So one of the expressions I love is walk the cat, where you go back when somebody's telling a story and you get them to go to the story that, a backstory that preceded it. Like, so if somebody talks about how they got to a certain point in time in their work, you, it's almost like you're telling, you ask me to tell me more and give another backstory. And then when they explain that, give me another backstory of how that led. So that you're getting them to go back in time and start to connect the dots and see how they have either used certain skills or certain behaviors and really start to connect, like I said, connect over time of what's really worked for them. Or maybe there's been some challenges so they can have some fun with it as well. So it's a great little device to get people to relax and not, you know, not to go Freudian on them to tell me about the first instance of this happening. So walking the cat, which I found from, I borrowed from somebody, but I just love using that as a visual in my head.
And just so I'm clear with this, it is walk, W-A-L-K, you are walking a cat, C-A-T.
Walking a cat. You know that's an issue. Well, they don't walk where you want to walk, so. But you're getting them to go backwards.
Yeah, okay. Don't have a cat, but I have seen people with little leashes on them in the city, which I don't really understand, but I try not to judge. I'm not a judging person, you know.
I know. That's what we like about you.
Well, among other things, there are so many. Where to start? Okay. All right. Thank you for that, Jules. I'm going to throw one in here that's we're on the same line. How about people using pictures? I'm sure we all do that at some point. I have a bunch of pictures I've taken and some PowerPoint slides. Like there's one of two parrots and they're sitting, they're brightly colored and they're sitting on a twig or something like that. And sometimes I'll have people make up captions for what they're talking about. I use it with the tell me about yourself or something like that. So maybe anybody have things about how they use pictures? That's what I do. I show people and say what's going on, make something up, give it a caption. Which then again can be the starting point to do a little more in a fun way, you know, with a story. So,
Tom, do you want to describe the postcard?
Yeah.
No, you could do that, Geraldine.
Oh, well, okay. So many years ago, we were participants in a strategic planning event for the school that we were in, with our kids were in, and that I taught at, and the guy who was doing it had this huge stack of postcards that he'd been collecting for a long time. And my recollection is that there were scenes on them as well, but we have done our own version where it's all people. And the idea is that, or at least most often what we usually do is say, there's two or three postcards that they can go and choose. There's a couple that they fight over. There's a couple that have gone missing because they were very popular. And people, I think, decided that they wanted them in their pocket. But it would be, you know, how are you feeling now? How were you feeling yesterday? And how do you want to feel tomorrow? Or something like that. Or this is why I wanted you to do it. What are the questions that we usually ask when we ask them to get three?
Well, we have
it's one that represents you.
Yeah, there are postcards that you're drawn to, but something about it that speaks to your current situation, or something that reminds you of your past. or something that intrigues you and you hope to have in your future. So people look at, and we have 150 or so postcards.
Wow.
So this works really well for a group of maybe 25 to 50 people. And then they pick one or two or sometimes three. And then we put people in triad, so in threes, and then just share why they've picked that. And stories often come up about vacations they've had or something that's going on in work that the postcard has reminded them of. So it's a nice way, and it's kind of fun to collect postcards. So we've collected our postcards from all over the United States and different places we've traveled around the world, and sometimes people give them to us. So we have this really beautiful collection of postcards, and people just like to look at them. But they invariably remind them of different aspects of themselves.
And Tom and Geraldine, do you use this as an icebreaker? I'm trying to imagine then, so I'm doing this, and then is that, you know, just to get us comfortable with things and the idea of sharing stories, or does it have another application? It doesn't need to. I'm just wondering if there's another
It doesn't usually lead, we don't usually lead off with it. We often,
oh, you don't? Oh, okay.
No, it's often like just before lunch or just before a break, so that people, because it's difficult to break people out of it. They really like sharing. They like sharing. They want to hear more about why you chose that or what it was that it reminded you of, or like there's a great one that just comes to mind of it's a 1950s postcard, and it's a giant baby pushing the mother in a stroller. And the stories that come out of men and women about feeling out of control in their home life, and they're coming from people who have babies up to teenagers, you know, but they like get all caught up, and you can just hear what's going on. And we sort of float around whenever possible to kind of get an idea of what's going on in the group. But
and we also, we use that just to jump in. It's more than an icebreaker, because often the program that they want is for people to get to know each other. Like in an agency that has a high turnover rate, or recently they've had a lot of new hires, they want people to get to know each other more than just work. And so this is something that can help people to get to know a few other people on a deeper level. Mm-hmm. You could also pair it with a question that might be, How is an image here remind me of a struggle that I'm having at work? And in that way, you could create a series of stories that would be, and we wouldn't leave it at the struggle, but also, you know, how can we break through this challenge that we have at work? And you could use the images to elicit the challenges that people have as soon as they have that in their mind, or the solutions that they're looking for. It becomes a vehicle for people to talk.
Wonderful. You know, the idea of the postcard, I have not really looked at this, but I will toss this name out. There's a woman named Lisa Sonora. I think it's Sonora. She's a writer, and she does workshops, but it's so funny. I just got something from her. She's doing some sort of event called the Postcard Journal, and it has to do with travel. So I think, you know, my immediate thing is, like, you buy postcards and you write on them what you did that day, but I think it's more than that, you know, and I think you could also adapt it so to maybe your internal travels or something like that. So interesting, the whole idea.
Oh, yeah.
The postcard piece. Yeah, well, thank you. And thank you for clarifying that. That's, I was just curious as to that, and I can see that it is. I appreciate Geraldine said that we don't do that as an icebreaker, because people get into it and it gets, you know, we need to do it before lunch or something like that, where we can give enough time to it. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Anybody? anybody have some blogs or some online resources or even a conference, maybe where they heard a speaker or they just read about it? And just tossing that out. Anybody along those lines?
Well, one that strikes me, there was a fellow named Jeff Gitmore. He's a sales consultant down in North Carolina. And a couple of times when I saw him do his stuff, he usually starts off and you don't know it's he, but it's he'll be filling water glasses. He'll have a shirt on of whatever restaurant or hotel he's on. So he looks like a maintenance guy. In fact, one of his shirts says maintenance. And so as people are coming in, sitting down, you know, he's filling up the water glasses, doing some odds and ends. You know, finally he gets up on stage and starts talking. And it's he always gets an amazing look from the audience because they assume this guy was just the maintenance guy. And he starts, his pitch is really, don't judge the book kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And interesting effect, kind of gimmicky, but I've seen it been pretty effective in a couple of instances.
Mm. Yeah, the element of the first impressions, don't assume, look deeper, all of those things.
Yeah.
Yeah, great idea. Thank you. Let's see what else we have going on here.
I got a question to ask the general group.
Sure.
I just did a presentation, and it was at a one of our big attorney firms here in Pittsburgh, and working with the group about storytelling for court cases and how you do your closing arguments and that kind of stuff. And so we were the senior partner who was not in attendance said he wanted to talk to me after the whole thing and wanted me to grade the different participants as to who I thought grasped the content best and kind of give a, 1 through 10 on these things. I did what I thought was appropriate, but I was just curious to the group. How do you feel about that type of thing? I can tell you're all excited about it.
This actually happened to me. This happened to me a long time ago, and I was asked by the manager of a group of people that I went into, and I demurred simply because I felt that wasn't the expectation up front, and that wasn't how I expressed it to them, that their learning was going to be looked at in this way. So what I did instead was I sort of talked about people generally. I gave some general feedback about, I didn't give numbers. I said who had really done well, others who were developing, that kind of thing. So I used more general and kept it positive because I felt that the grading was at odds with the learning environment that we had created. And this came after the fact. So I felt a little bit like, this wasn't part of our setup. So I demurred, and he did, I think about it now, he was kind of laughing about it, but he did push me, and he says, nothing's going to happen, I just really want to know, and I just didn't feel comfortable. I had that, that knot in your stomach that tells you, listen to it, so I gave some general feedback, and that seemed to, because I felt it was like, what he really wanted to know, I think, was like, was it useful, did they get it, were they going to use it, so I gave some generalized feedback, so that's my experience, and other people on the call?
It's Jules, I think you break a trust whether somebody knows you've done it or not with the group and what you're using information. So
yeah.
I think what your gut was probably screaming is that you'd be out of integrity.
Yeah.
And I think you rebundled it into more general observations, not that the sessions wasn't meant for surveillance. And if they wanted to surveil, they could have observed it themselves. And
yeah,
as opposed to, like they're not lab rats and it's not a Skinner experiment. So, yeah, I know. But it's hard because you're trying to keep the client happy but also not work in a way that you're not comfortable with.
Right. Yeah. Other comments?
Yeah, Tom here. One, it just, I think, would feel a whole lot different if there was an upfront expectation like that, because then it's not any different than being a teacher in a class and having to grade students.
Mm-hmm.
So in that setting, it would be a traditional thing that you have to do. But I also thought it's the, numerically grading it that really rubs me wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But a boss asking, you know, we just did this session, who do you think really, you know, comprehended it and got it or seemed natural at it? That seems like an okay question to me. And but unless you have to go through like everybody, unless the group's really small, but just giving your impressions of like who really got something, and giving an instance in that seems okay. But, you know, if you're going to like, okay, how would you grade everybody? That feels
And then we get into
off.
The whole grading thing, which we know is a tangled web
yeah,
we weave.
Especially.
And,
yeah.
And I think to pick up on Tom's comment, I think I remember saying, you know, I wanted to give some positive information about some folks that I thought could use additional development work in this, you know, and that they, you know, by identifying, you know, generally that this would be, they would respond well to more practice around this or, you know, talking about this more in your one-on-ones. So Dave, how about we'll bring it back to you. I mean, what do you think? Did you ask the question? Got some of my thoughts. I'd love to hear back.
Well, it wasn't part of the initial contract and the expectations of what was going on. This was an afterthought on the partners' process. And it was an intimate group. There was just eight attorneys and myself, and we spent together. So, and we really got a good feel for each other. In my particular case, and with these kind of, I mean, you're talking about people that are making pretty substantial money at this point too. These are big six-figure jobs that all these guys had, and girls. There were some girls in there too. And I wound up kind of in between what we're all saying. I mean, there were a few people that were exceptional. I mean, they could have talked to things instead of myself. And then there's kind of the 80-20 rule that I lived with my whole life. So, you know, out of the eight people there, I'd say a couple were exceptional. There was one that either was bored out of his mind or just wasn't with it, I don't know what. And the rest of them kind of just fell in the middle of the whole thing. So it was fairly easy to group them together to say, well, you know, this guy and this girl, and they got to be your stellar people. And he says, well, yeah, of course they are. And he said, well, they were stellar in class too, and they could really teach this to other people. And he says, well, they're too expensive to teach a class. Oh, well, okay, I guess I need to charge you more.
Yeah, raise your rate.
Yeah. The other five, I said, you know, we could use some additional work in all the kind of different areas. And I said, but I got to tell you, there was one guy that was just totally disinterested in the whole process. And I don't know whether he's a new person or so experienced that he was bored. But he just, you know, so instead of doing the 1 to 10 ranking, I kind of grouped these people together.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm betting that was not any big news to that manager.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, it's usually not. I mean,
it's usually not, yeah. Interesting things we run into around this. Yeah. Okay. Any other sticky situations around stories or wish something I know now that I wish I'd known then kinds of things?
Well, I do have one question, and I think we were kind of getting toward this a little bit earlier, but this in that, Tricia, you said that you had done the Story Slam, and I think it was a Moth event.
It was sponsored by the Moth, yes.
Yeah. So you thought, well, you're doing something new, and it was a good experience, and you might not have been the very best at it, but you know, you were glad that you did it.
Mm-hmm.
And my working with the people that I am who've gotten out of prison and they're sharing their stories, and we're doing a series of practices, and then there's a storytelling night. There's actually one a month for the next 3 months. And I find myself sometimes wishing that they'd practice more and that their stories would be more polished, or that they would actually get their story down and it wouldn't keep switching around, or that they would know what they're really trying to convey. So at the first storytelling night that we had, the stories were very powerful, but nobody would know that they were really powerful until that moment, because they just kept switching their stories and they hadn't gotten them down. And I'm a little unsure how much I should push them to rehearse and how much I should just trust that in the moment that they'll rise to the occasion. And I think that this is a very broad question, but I'd just be interested in other people's opinion about how much you push people to set their story or just let them stay loose with it.
I think it's a great question, Tom, and I don't even see it as so very broad. I think it's a wonderful thing for us to look at. So I'll toss that out to the group.
This is Pete. I think it relates to what the purpose of the story is. Is the purpose to get them to tell their story to other people, or is it to get them to tell their story to other people to change the behavior of other people?
Yeah, and the answer to that, Pete, is first to tell their story so that they'll have self-reflection, and then also tell their story so that other people can learn from their experience. But their purpose is not, you know, to convey the best possible story to, you know, just enamor people or... So I'm thinking that, you know, the thing that matters most is that the meaning of their story is clear to them and that other people will pick that up when it is. But the other stuff is just nice if they speak really clearly or if they know ahead of time exactly what they're going to say or pretty close.
Yeah.
We're getting. I would just listening to that. That's. I think that has a lot of meaning and truth behind it. Back to the experience at the moth. There were people from New York that were the moth people, and that, you know, we had them people in the group, and they said at the beginning. Now, some of you may be doing this for the very first time in your life, standing up here, and some of you may have done this many times, and you've done many story slams. And actually, that was the case, Tom, and we saw the difference. You could tell. But what was interesting was that even with some of the stories that were very sort of winding and, you know, you had a five-minute limit, you know, people got something from it. You know, I remember some things, even though I thought, well, they really took a long time to get to that point. But when they got there on the long and winding road, it was meaningful, and the group, the audience liked it. So... And then I'm thinking of the woman who was voted number one. It wasn't me. I know you all think it was, but it wasn't. And she had a wonderful story, and it was a very professional story, but it was warm. But she set her context and her stage and her setting and time and place, and she had a theme, and she carried it along, and we went up and down and through the challenges, and she tied it up with a beautiful bow at the end. Now, that's someone who has told that story a number of times. And people really liked it. So I'm kind of listening to what you said about maybe it is enough, and maybe it is more than enough for them to have said out loud something so personal about themselves that maybe for them that's where the impact comes, and it's not what we would look at and say, well, technically, you know, it's artistic merits are good, like the ice skaters, but technically, you know, maybe that's more than enough for them at that time. I'm thinking of Pete's question about what is the purpose and why do this. I don't know, just some kind of thoughts there as I was looking at that. So.
Thank you.
Yeah, well, I would concur with what Patricia and Pete have both said about it. It depends on the purpose of a particular speaker is about. Most of my stuff is business related, very pragmatic type stuff. And so for my purposes, preparation. And what is the point you're trying to say? Make sure you can say it properly. Is it going to be different every time? I don't care about that as long as it's done in the right manner. But that's the group that I'm dealing with. So again, going back, what's the purpose? What are the people trying to do? Are you just trying to get them to talk about themselves, or is there an endpoint that changes someone's mind?
Go ahead. Who is that? Sherilyn?
It's Jules.
Jules.
I want to dovetail on that because I think in certain cases, and you know, story for business where you're making an impact, you're trying to, you know, maybe sell something or convert reasoning is one thing. I had the experience of being at a conference recently where I was the facilitator of a panel about men and women in negotiation and diversity. And I had two people, and they went a little rogue during our session, even though we planned to plan things, and we were all ready. They did things like stood up in the middle of the panel. So I ended up looking like a therapist on the stage and everything. But I used some good devices about talking to the audience and pretending they weren't on the stage, because one of my thoughts was, okay, most of the times I'm encouraging people to come out of their shell, but in this case, I don't think we're going to have any issues. What do you think, guys? And that was to 400 executives. So, but as we moved forward, my dyad gave examples of how they used, you know, their position as a woman and a man in business in negotiation and their level. So, but the most compelling part was when this woman decided to tell her story about leaving a company and having everybody come to her to say what a difference she made and what a role model she was for them. Now, she had only left the company a week before. She is a strappy, no-nonsense, you know, tough gal. She bursts into tears on the stage. And, yes, and I was sitting on the couch. Like, I remained sitting on the couch trying to sit up as straight as I could because I'm totally short. If I'm short when I'm standing, I'm really short when I'm sitting. And I have this person who's 5'3", and the reason she's standing is she was too short to be seen in the back of the room, and a 6'4" guy next to her. And in that moment, I was like, okay, this is real. Don't interrupt. Let it happen. And her friend, guy next to her, comforted her by her shoulder, and they had a whole discussion about like the man choosing to comfort the woman in that point. But no one cared about the speech being perfect. I think everyone was impressed with the fact that she shared it, and she wept during the final part of the thing. And she was in shock. She hadn't processed what had happened, I think, a couple of weeks before, to use a therapy term, but everyone knew it was real. So it wasn't about how she told it. It was the fact that she was really in the moment, and she really, there was no editing and no, you know, censoring about what had happened. And I talked to a lot of people, and that made the biggest impression. It was the most avant-garde panel discussion I've ever facilitated, but it works because people are never going to forget it. If story is hitting your emotions and giving something compelling, we hit it. But it was something to build belief and experience, like staring at 400 people and thinking, what do you do next and what's appropriate? And I think sometimes just sitting there and letting it take place was a big lesson to learn that morning, and trusting that the right thing will happen. That's my point on that. But authenticity,
wonderful,
I think, was the key part.
Thank you, Jules.
Yeah.
Just let it happen. Okay. Excuse me. I'm just going to make a note here that I can't believe it, but we are at 7:27. I feel like this time just flew by. So I, you know, just want to be true to our timing here. So is there, it's 7:28, we have a couple of minutes left. Is there anyone who would like to say something to wrap this up or comment or whatever?
I'll throw one thing out that I'm just looking for some help on. Again, this is David, and I'm working with my son, who's a professor, and we're putting together an academic textbook on sales. Most of all the textbooks we've seen are written by academics that have never had doors closed in their face or customers lie to them or, you know, the normal routine of being in sales. And so we're putting this together to get out by January. And I might lean on you all at some point to look at certain chapters or excerpts of this, because the majority of this all really deals with asking questions and storytelling. So I just let you all know about that.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. Duly noted. Yeah, we're resources. That's one of the big mm-hmm. things I think that our SIG is a group of people willing to share ideas and feedback. Okay. It's just about the top of the hour, so I think that I'm going to close the call by thanking each and every one of you for bringing such depth and such richness to our session. What's our title again? All Things Story, or Everything Story. I changed it a couple of times. All Things Story. And I just loved hearing from people, and hope that you got things you can take away and use. And it was just lovely to be in your company for the past hour.
Yeah. Thank you, Tricia. Thanks for facilitating.
Nice job. Nice session.
Very welcome. Thank you. Yeah. All right, so I'm going to hit the magic button here. Start now.